the Eternity Podcast Network, eternitypodcasts.com.au.
Hello, I'm Jenny Salt, and welcome to Salt, a place where we'll enter into the lives of people and discover heartwarming, sometimes challenging, yet always distinctive gospel stories.
They were deemed cursed, and people removed themselves from their company. People didn't touch them, just out of ignorance. People weren't just being mean for the sake of it. They thought that whatever they had could be caught.
My guest today is Kathy Rossiter. Now, right now in 2021, we're living in the days of COVID and lockdown and the voices of epidemiologists and pathologists just being part of the daily news. And Kathy's experience is as a medical laboratory technician. But for Kathy, her work is amongst the poorest and neediest in our world, with mercy ships on board the MV Africa Mercy. Welcome, Kathy.
Good morning, Jenny. Thank you for having me.
Kathy, I always love to hear how where people grew up and some of their stories. So firstly, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Western Sydney, in the area where many of our brothers and sisters, as in humanity, are currently locked down and facing lots of infections. So Western Sydney for me, Guildford.
Yes.
I think that's right there up on the list that Gladys is often referring to.
I think so. I think that the daily Gladys o'clock, we're hearing Guildford being mentioned, and we must make mention now that we're recording during the lockdown in Sydney in 2021. So, but you're not there now. Where are you living now, Kathy?
I'm living on the south coast, which is number one where my family moved to during my dad's work, moving backwards and forwards to Sydney a couple of times. And then my husband and I got married. We've lived in the Illawarra area for our entire married life.
Beautiful. What are some of your childhood memories?
Well, Guildford was very different to what it is now. There were lots of open spaces. My childhood memories really are around family and church. My dad worked 5.5 days. My mum was a stay-home mum. I have a brother and sister, so there was three of us, and the dog Buttons. Dad worked 4.5 days, as I said, and Saturday afternoon was when the action started around our house, with gardening, and about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Dad would come inside. A baked dinner would be permeating the house, the wonderful smell. And he would sit down and watch an hour. He would afford himself an hour of watching sport on ABC TV. And that's how I learned about cricket and rugby league from my dad's on a Saturday afternoon. And then Sundays was church. Two times a day, morning and evening, and because church was also where our family members attended, so it was very much the meeting place for not only friends but also family.
That sounds really lovely, Kathy, a really lovely childhood with those memories. And obviously, as you say, church was very much a part of that, and it sounds like a positive memory. So when you think about those days of church on Sunday, were there people who were especially significant or influential for you?
I think you could probably count very many. But in this particular context, in my really early childhood, church was boring. Let's not let's not muck around. As a kid, church was sitting still, or you'd get into trouble. It was not fiddling, or you'd get in, or there was a frown. But one of the things that used to perk me up was letters that were read out during church from missionaries that our church supported. So our church was Bible-centered, Christ-centered, calls for salvation on a very regular basis. And many of my parents' peers were in some sort of outreach ministry, some going as far as overseas. And there was one particular couple who would write back, and their letters would be read out at the end of the service, and then those letters would be handed around family to family for them to read the lovely details. But there was always a sense of awe attached to those letters, because they had come from so far away. Because Africa was very far away from downtown Guildford in the late 1950s, 60s. To hear the stories of life when you move yourself from Australia culture to an African culture, they just seemed now to be completely embedded in my mind as something that was influential.
Mm.
And it was faith in action.
Yes, that's a wonderful observation. Any particular letters or words in those letters that still resonate for you?
I think how the the particular couple were doing translation work in Chad. They were translating the Mbai language to produce a readable Gospels. I think it was eventually the whole Bible. But I think for me, one of the things was the day-to-day tasks that the mum had to find and do, like cooking with ingredients that you were not sure about, things like that. It was probably the mundane that caught my eye.
Yeah.
The things that make up life, rather than, oh my gosh, how on earth are they doing translation work in a language they can't I can't speak?
Yeah. So I guess real life in a cross-cultural context.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Kathy, it sounds like the church that you grew up in, being, as you say, Bible-based, gospel-centered, obviously would have encouraged you to consider Christ for yourself. How old were you when you became a Christian?
It's probably very hard to actually nail that down. And I don't have this magic moment. What I do have is an invitation to a vacation, what do they call it, vacation club during a school holidays held in a neighbor's house where the local neighborhood children would gather one afternoon a week, and we would do activities. I can remember sitting in a room full of kids on the floor while she did a great job of talking to us. At the end of the vacation club, we were all sat down and we were asked to bow our heads, and if we wanted to invite Jesus into our lives, that we should raise our hand. Now, I maybe 11, 12, maybe 10, 11, who knows. And in my naivety, I thought, okay, everybody's got their eyes closed. Now's a good time.
That's right. No one will see.
No one will see. I won't be. I was a shy kid.
Yeah.
And the idea of waving my hands about like that was not on the cards. But I thought everybody's eyes were closed, including the person at the front. and I put my hand up. I felt compelled to put my hand up. And so that's my earliest time, but really growing into that during teenage years, youth group, my peer group at school were very connected to their own churches, which was a blessing again. And it wasn't until I was probably 17, 18, where the rubber starts to hit the road in your thinking, that I started to get involved with a group called Young Life, whose ministry was to those that don't go to church, that belonging to Jesus was then very important, and standing up and say, I believe and I belong. And then encouraging other young kids, peers really, to consider Jesus for themselves.
Yeah.
And of course, to be authentic in that, you need to be authentic in your own mind that this is the way to go forward.
That's wonderful, Kathy. I love what you're saying about thinking about where the rubber hits the road and earning your own faith and thinking about what that looks like as an authentic follower of Jesus. That's very encouraging. So you finished high school.
Yes.
You're a Christian.
Yes.
And you decided to become a medical laboratory technician.
Yes.
And when I think about medical laboratory technicians, I picture white coats and science labs and test tubes and petri dishes. Is that right? Have I got a right picture of what a medical laboratory technician does and looks like?
I think you've got a visual. I think you've got a visual. It's probably a very simplified visual. I'm happy with that. Most people glaze over when I start to talk about what I do.
Yeah,
It's not the subject that comes up around the Christmas dinner table.
But it is something that's coming up a lot because of COVID, and you guys are behind the scenes doing all the testing, which is wonderful.
We are.
And you're coming into your own.
Apparently, yes. We're getting mentions. Which for so many of us, we're actually quite introverted. It's an interesting trade that attracts the introvert, the person that can work quietly by themselves, meticulously carrying out a process that is repeatable. So following scientific method and being able to give out dependable and meaningful results to doctors so they can further their treatment of patients. So anytime you have blood taken for a health issue, I'm one of the people that eventually holds that blood tube or that swab and takes it and produces numbers or facts for the doctor to work upon. In the old days, test tubes and were very much used, and flasks and Bunsen burners. But these days, it's highly mechanized, and the processes are still done the same, but they're robotic these days.
Right.
We couldn't get through the volume of work we're doing without that.
Well, that is true, especially in these COVID days. Why did you decide to do it in the first place? I would imagine a lot of teenagers wouldn't even know that that was an option.
I'm not sure I really did either, but the other option my mother was keen was on was being a secretary, and the idea of a 9-to-5 job behind a desk did not have the romance of this course that I had found that I qualified for and that I could get into, and that started almost immediately. Yes, we had quite a discussion about that. I think she didn't know much about it either, and the idea of being a secretary, she knew that you could get a job anytime, anywhere.
Yes, yeah.
And so job security was important in those early days. Well, it's still important today, goodness. But I'm sorry, my romantic notions of not being tied to perhaps my parents' expectations was, yes, look, I think I went into it without full knowledge. That's for sure.
As we take a short break, I'd like to say how thankful and encouraged we are for the people who pray for and support the work and ministry of SMVC. We are committed to prayer and the priority of prayer in all that we do at the college because we know just how dependent we are upon God and His grace. And we'd love you to join us in praying for the work and ministry of SMVC too. Head to the resources section on our website, smbc.edu.au, where we post some short daily SMBC prayer points in the prayer diary section. And thank you for your ongoing prayer partnership. You married Mike?
Yes.
And you had children of your own?
Yes.
And so, what did that look like for you as a Christian, being a wife and a mum?
Being a wife and a mum, and being a mum particularly, was really a galvanising experience for me. Children learn at school, yes, but they learn more from the people that are at home. And I knew this. I had read all about it, and that they were likely to follow the example of what was it at home. So if you swore, they swore. If they, yes, they would pick up every habit. And the one habit that I wanted them to know about the most was to know Jesus. So I spent those years becoming it was a deliberate decision on my part to be, you can't say becoming the best Christian version of yourself. That's not quite right. It was about dedicating myself to Jesus in the belief that He would live through me and show my girls a way of faith, and that I could plant faith into their lives that was tangible and real, and that I would be living it out in front of them each day. Mm. So my Bible became my constant companion. I grew in my faith, particularly during those years. I just wanted to be the best example for them. And the only way I knew how to move forward with that was to be the best, to love Jesus the best way I could.
That is beautiful, Kathy. That is really beautiful. And I think that being a wife and a mum is a very important ministry. And it sounds like you gave yourself to it totally. Did you put on hold your work as a medical laboratory technician during those years?
Yes. I was fortunate enough. We were able to live on one wage. Mm. And for 22 years, I supplemented our income by doing all sorts of jobs, but to be available to the children at home, to the girls at home, was extremely important. And even though the 18% borrowing rates were killing
That's
us.
Right. I remember those days too. Yes, it's quite mind-boggling.
We stayed the course, and it wasn't until after the girls had virtually left home that I returned to my trade. I had worked all sorts of jobs.
Yeah. So you returned to your trade, but not necessarily in the way that others might have expected. What did you do? You went back into the lab in a sense, but what did that look like for you?
Going back into the laboratory, I wasn't sure whether I was going to make the cut. I felt like having been out of it for 22 years, what was I going to remember? So it was a complete retraining process, that was long. And I had experience in biochemistry. I had experience in hematology. I had experience in coagulation studies. I had experience taking blood. But when it came to this particular job that I picked up, I was put into a department that needed someone to work with in transfusion. So here I was, and between the time of my early education and entering the lab again, they'd completely rewritten the textbooks, and so I learnt an awful lot over a number of years, training and to understand transfusion medicine and how to handle blood safely, and so that it could be made ready for transfusion support for operations and for oncology patients.
And that took you to another area of life, and this is now talking about kind of like almost like retirement time.
Yes.
Perhaps early retirement, when people might be thinking, well, if I can retire a little bit earlier, what would life look like? What did early retirement look like for you and Mike?
Well, Mike always hoped for early retirement, didn't he? retirement was a question that loomed as a question. What would it look like? We were working through finances to find out whether or not this was ever, you know, when was this going to happen? Had we really worked enough to do that? And it was my journey on was really kicked into motion by our financial advisor, not a Christian. He was looking for what direction did we want our finances to go in, and he simply asked the question, what did we want our retirement to look like, which then started lots of brainstorming over cups of tea and cups of coffee of where, what, how, what would it look like? And as time went on, it was, well, it grew, it really did grow into, where does God really want us to be? What would, and so the questions just kept piling on. And as, so you would not expect your financial advisor to be asking you a question that you've turned into a spiritual journey, but a spiritual journey nonetheless was what came out.
Mm. And where did that take you? What did that mean?
Well, we started to think that, okay, so I'm going to quote a friend who doesn't remember even telling me this, but that's all right. I keep reminding her that she's told me, and she said, I still can't remember that time. My friend Margaret, we would spend hours talking out on the road while the kids played, a deeply committed Christian, and she said, and we must have been talking about some sort of travel, and she said, Kathy, if you want to travel, join a mission. And I took her for I thought she would remember that. Surely she would remember that now when I talk to her, but she doesn't. But God used that, and again used that to direct my thoughts. What do we want our retirement to look like? Well, of course we wanted to see some more of the world without the restrictions of family and finances. We were freer to take up those, but we also didn't want to necessarily follow everybody on the bucket list journey. And we wanted our retirement resources to count for something. We had skills that had built up over a long, long working life, and to just suddenly retire and not have those skills mean anything or be useful seemed wasteful to us. And so we began looking for where that could be of use. And that required not just me, but my husband Mike, who'd worked with the public sector for all his life. Where could we both work? What could we do that would satisfy both our abilities to work long and hard? That's when bumping into a magazine article, Salvation Army actually, magazine article on mercy ships, provided the next link in the journey, where I was reading the article and going, oh, wow. I reckon Mike could find something to do here because it involves people. He's a great people person. And so our journey went on into mercy ships.
want to tell you about another great podcast. It's called The Word on the Street with Anna Ware. Anna designs 10-minute Bible studies for you and your kids that you can do literally anywhere, in the car, in your home, and they're full of great questions, helpful answers, and great reflections on the Bible. If you'd like to subscribe to this and other great podcasts, go to eternitypodcasts.com. And Kathy, Mercy Ships is an organization, a not-for-profit organization. And you were actually, you and Mike went on the MV Africa Mercy Ship. Is that right? So you went to Africa.
That's right. Yes. So the Mercy Ships offer a first world hospital ship, surgical ship. So everything inside the ship is first world, is air conditioning, clean water, sewerage, all the things that we take for granted that are not available to people who live in Africa, in West Africa, the poorest of the poor, the sub-Saharan areas. They offer free surgery to serve the population there in West Africa.
And where did you and Mike, what was your first trip?
Our first trip was a trip that we wanted to put our toe in the water. Well, 8 weeks later, we had spent time in Freetown, Sierra Leone, in a city designed for maybe 20,000 that had 20 million in it. It was it was very different. It was teeming with people.
And is this your toe in the water?
This was our toe in the water. This was right. Culture shock big time.
And Kathy, what were you doing specifically on the ship?
I was in a happy place. I was working in the laboratory on board with three or four others from mixed nationalities. I was working with Scandinavians and Americans. I was working with Netherlands believers, all believers, all volunteering, all paying their own way.
Amazing.
And I was working shoulder to shoulder. And what was wonderful about that was my training at home matched the training that I was seeing from my fellow crew members. And we were speaking the same technical language. So even though we had cultural and language differences across our own, the four of us inside the laboratory, we were inside our own culture of being a medical laboratory technician, and we spoke the same language. And so it really was my happy place.
Yeah.
And we served the surgeries that were going on. So everybody who had a surgery needed, the doctors needed to know how healthy the patient was. And we gave them that kind of information. And when they went to surgery, we would also supply units of blood for transfusion to support the patient as they went through their surgery. Some of these surgeries were you never see them here in Australia. A small problem is dealt with as a small problem in Australia. In the developing world, small problems become big problems because they can't be attended to. People can't afford them in a timely way. And if they could afford them or they pursued them, it was likely to put their families into poverty and take away their monetary resources. A lot of them were subsistence farming, and so they lived from one meal to the next. And if you had a medical problem, you couldn't fix it. You couldn't fix it today. You probably couldn't fix it tomorrow. And if you went to the doctor, you were told, we can't fix you. And so they were told no, no. Or they were deemed cursed, and people removed themselves from their company. People didn't touch them. and be out of just out of ignorance. It wasn't, people weren't just being mean for the sake of it. They thought that whatever they had could be caught, and so.
Kathy, I'm sure you would have seen so many heartbreaking situations as the ship was docked in these various ports in Africa. Are there any stories in particular that stand out of the various times that you were on the Africa Mercy ship?
Oh, yes. There's plenty of those. It's really which one do I pick? I think there are two particular stories, if I may. So when you're doing soft tissue surgery, essentially plastic surgery to repair skin and bone from the invasion of tumours or growths, there's a lot of soft tissue, and that soft tissue has a tendency to to succumb to infection. And our job was to take the swabs from the nurses and identify what was the infection and what were the best antibiotics to use against those infections. And during the maxofacial surgeries and the where they did a lot of skin grafting, we were just inundated with people that were struggling. Their immune systems were down because they were poorly nourished, and they were fighting an infection. And I can remember one day in the lab going, oh, this has got to stop, come on. And standing in the middle of the lab and quite literally calling God, please let the plates tomorrow not grow anything. It'd be so nice to have these people freed from the infection that is slowing their healing. Did I find that? No, I didn't find the plates completely cleared. But God, every day was a miracle in this this wonderful place of healing, because it wasn't just the physical healing. We gave them back hope. Mm. And when hope becomes tangible, there's a future that people can look forward to.
Mm.
It was a lovely process. Probably the one thing that I did find was a young girl coming to us with a dental problem, and that was just insane. If we've got a sore tooth, we get to the dentist. We can't cope with the pain. This young lady came to us late in the day. She was very close to death from a tooth infection. She had become septic. Her blood was infected. And she required a surgical response to be able to clear away the infected tissue, all from a tooth infection.
Yeah.
We spent months with this young lady helping her, and I have no idea how she even was able to stand and walk up the dock, the gangplank, to be able to withstand the pain that she must have been in. Enormous, because I mean, if I get a toothache, I'm going to go to the dentist in a hurry. But yes, something as simple as a dentist toothache can be life threatening. And in her case, she would have been only days away from losing her life.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing to think that people like you and Mike and others are using their retirement, paying their own way, volunteering their services to give people like this young woman hope, not just physical, but modelling a love for Christ and following Jesus by how you've served in this way. As you look back on those days, Kathy, and think about that financial advisor who challenged you to think about what your retirement looked like, what is it that you think about in terms of what drives you as a Christian?
What drives me as a Christian? I think Jesus' own example drives me, and his continuous invitation for me to take part in life with him.
Yeah.
So it's finding out where he is active, where he wants to work, and just get involved, grow wherever I'm planted. That was one of the words from one of my Sunday school teachers when I was saying, how do I know? How do I know where God wants me? And he just said, grow where you're planted. Well, funnily enough, I was planted in a medical laboratory.
Yes.
And found myself to West Africa. And and our motto of following Jesus' example, that's the ship's motto, following the 2,000-year-old example of Jesus.
Yeah.
That's as simple as that. It's nothing complicated. And we just, and even though I'm not in Africa today, I may be again, but that is a principle then that defines, those questions still remain with me. I've answered them for a season. And I continue to ask the same questions and try to answer those for this season and the next season.
Yeah, that's wonderful, Kathy. I love that. Grow where you're planted. And it's been such an encouragement to hear how the Lord has used you where he's planted you. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you very much, Jenny.
I hope you've enjoyed being part of the conversation with Kathy today and, importantly, been encouraged to be salt and light to those around you. Coming up next episode, I'll be talking to Pete Stacey, someone who has known the joy of telling others about Jesus for most of his life and then had to preach that good news while watching his wife die from cancer. I'll see you then. Salt is hosted by me, Jenny Salt, and produced by Mark Hadley. Editing by Hadley Inc. For all show notes and more episodes, head to sbc.edu.au/salt. Salt is a Sydney Missionary and Bible College podcast and part of the Eternity Podcast Network, an audio collection showcasing the seriously good news of faith today. Thanks for making Salt possible.